And this is JPR, Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. It is 8:41 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Check us out online. The website for the program is jeffexchange.org. I seem to forget that every day at the end of the show. It's in bold now, jeffexchange.org. And it is part of our larger website for all services and things we do at JPR called ijpr.org. You can also take part in the program as it happens. Your phone calls and emails are welcome at 800-838-3760. And jx@jeffnet.org. We talked about communities dealing with homelessness in the first part of the hour. Now we'll visit with a single group bringing a new approach to homelessness to the table. Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change is the creation of Ashland's Julie Akins, who has worked as a journalist for many years and has spent a lot of time in recent years telling the stories of homeless people. The idea behind her relatively new organization is to put retired school buses to use as shelter for homeless people. Let's learn more about how it's meant to work. Julie Akins, again, the founder of Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change in the studio. Good to see you again, Julie.
Hi. Thanks for letting me come.
And Leo Gorsi's with us as well, who is the development director for Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Julie, you've been on quite a journey for several years now, meeting and telling the stories of homeless people. Tell us about the beginning of that odyssey and where it's taken you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, it has been quite a journey. So it started here locally. I was working at the Tidings at that time, and my editor kept sending me on stories involving homeless people and a lack of affordable housing. And the more I started digging into it, the more interesting it became. I started talking to people who are homeless and realizing that these are not the same people that I was covering back in the 80s when it was kind of guys under the bridge. These were people who were my age, people in their 50s and 60s, people on Social Security, folks with children, working people. And so as I saw that trend and looked at the economic divide that seems to be increasing, I realized that this was a bigger story than I had originally thought. So I started in Seattle, went all the way down through the desert of California, going to pretty much every homeless camp I could find. And I interviewed, I don't know, Jeffrey, I think like 300 people on this journey, and saw how people lived and spoke to them about their actual lived experience and discovered that my hunch was right. People are becoming homeless as a result of the economy more than any other reason. And so it's sort of became obvious when it's like, well, what should we do? We should fix the economy, give people living wage jobs and affordable housing. You know, so that's sort of what happened, and that journey continued. I started doing that work for AllCare and doing research for their social determinants of health, which speaks to how poverty affects actual physical well-being.
And AllCare is what kind of organization?
They're a CCO, a community care organization, and they administer Medicare.
Okay, so they take care of the Oregon Health Plan in parts of Southwest Oregon.
That's correct, okay. Yeah.
So how did the idea for school buses come about?
It came about because I started talking to, I met this woman, I started talking to families who are homeless, and I met this woman who housed her children in a school bus. And it was her dream to make her bus a little more efficient and effective. And I started looking at that and thinking, oh, well, if that's what people want, that seems like a thing that could be done. And one day I quite literally woke up from a dream about a house and a bus, and I started researching it. And these schoolies are phenomenal. 240 square feet, which is roughly twice the size of a tiny house. And you can put absolutely every amenity that you would have in a home in a school bus. And so many of them are retired every year. And still have a lot of life left in them, and they're very safe and well cared for. So it seemed to be a good fit.
That was one thing I noticed in another interview, the one you did with Channel 5. Julie used to be the news director of Channel 5, also at Channel 12, I should point out, in the Rogue Valley, where I worked for. But the school buses have to be retired after a certain amount of time?
12 years. Yeah, so they're in great shape. The bus we're working on right now has 124,000 miles. They will literally go a million miles. Zero rust. It smells good. Every window works. The floors are in great condition. And so we just like fix it up from there. So it's a really nice shell. And it's actually quite pretty inside, which I didn't realize till we hollowed it out. It's got these wonderful rounded ceilings. It's a very sweet place.
So you bought the first one from Grants Pass, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
How long ago?
I think I bought that. We got our grant in December, and I bought that in late February.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been at work on it for a while now.
Yeah, well, it was fits and starts. You know, I had somebody working on it, and then she decided to ride her bike to Alaska. And so then I had to find another person to work on it. And now we've been working on it full time here for the last couple of months. It's our first one, so we're learning as we go. You know how that is.
Leo Gorsi, what are the economics like in trying to figure out not only the assembly of a school bus into something like a permanent shelter slash home, but also trying to bring in the money to be able to do that?
Okay, good question. Well, the economics are essentially we can build a bus. Our goal is to get a template where we can build a bus for about $18,000, which is a really good price and really economical. And when you're doing the work on the buses, there's all kinds of ways to save money. And so we pay attention to that. And so our first bus is probably going to go over budget a little bit, but that's our first bus. So we're getting that our template to scale up is going to be around $18,000 to build a fully equipped bus, kitchen, bathroom, shower, solar energy, everything that somebody needs to be self-sustaining. As far as the money coming in, it's been surprising the amount, the support, the kind of financial support that we've been getting. We kind of wake up every other day now going, wow, this person just gave us this, or we just got a check from that. I think we had an article that came out in the Tidings a couple days ago. And as soon as the article came out, somebody gave us a very generous donation, a couple thousand dollars. And so it's really amazing how people are rising up. I think the scope of what we're doing and the focus of what we're doing is really resonating with a lot of people. Especially since we're focusing on children. That is our focus, is families getting children off the street.
Forever Homes Vehicles for Change is the organization. Leo Gorsi, the development director. Julie Akins, the founder. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Ask questions, make comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned tiny homes, and so that raises the question, Julie Akins. I mean, why not tiny homes, or why not repurposed Winnebagos or something?
Good question. Well, it's not that it's not tiny homes. I'm not against tiny homes. This is just an alternative to that that's a little less bureaucratic and less expensive. To have a tiny home, you have to actually have a piece of land, and this doesn't require that. You can park your RV or your school bus. It's not an RV. Very, very important to distinguish, and I'll talk about that in a second. But you can park your schoolie in an RV park, or you can park it on a piece of land, or you can park it in your mother's driveway, where a tiny house needs this piece of land, and you need land use regulations and planning and all of that stuff. So it can take years for that to happen, and kids don't have years. They have one childhood. So I'm trying to do this quickly. And it's different than a Winnebago, because a Winnebago is already pre-built, and they're made out of materials that are not necessarily sustainable and environmentally friendly, and they're not really easily customizable. A school bus, you strip it down, take out all the seats, and you can do whatever you want. It's this blank canvas. And so we're recycling the bus. We're recycling everything we put in it. We're using sustainable materials. So that's the big difference. And they're actually a little bit bigger.
They are at that. I mean, and taller, too, it seems like.
Yeah, they're taller. You can walk through there. If you're a 6 foot, our builder's like 6 foot one. He's walking through with no trouble and doesn't have to take off his baseball cap. So
how did you find the various avenues to get stuff and be able to get sustainable materials and recycle the stuff you've taken out, that sort of thing? As we've learned in recent months, recycling has become trickier.
It is trickier. And I one of the things that we're doing, it's like creative stuff, you know, and our builder is really good at this. He's a young guy who's built his own schoolie that he lives in. So we're trading off of his experience. Just the other day, we went and I live in a building that had all these pallets on a loading dock, and I walked in and said, hey, can I have those? So I went through and got the ones that were fire treated, not chemically treated. We put those in the back of a truck, took them, and then we spent days just taking them apart, sanding them. So we're going to use that wood in the bus. It's just a little bit of creativity. Right now we are seeking, if I can throw out a plug, is
sure.
That okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeking a stove, an oven combo, 30 by 36. We're seeking a sort of a not a very tall refrigerator, about a 5-foot refrigerator. And we're seeking an inverter, and we're seeking batteries for our solar setup. Those things can be rather expensive. So if someone is hearing this and wants to help us out, we'd love that, because we're looking for things that are still working and look nice, but are recycled things as opposed to buying new.
Does your car stop a lot more often now by curbs as you see things that you think could be used for the school buses?
My car stops a lot more often, and I think my laptop is exhausted from Craigslist searching. Yeah.
Probably. I noticed the lingo you've adopted. Don't call them school buses anymore. Call them schoolies.
Schoolies, yeah. There's a Schoolie Nation and Schoolie.net, and for some reason I wouldn't have chosen this, but it's S-K-O-O-L-I-E, yeah, which offends my grammatic sense, but so that's the name of it for some reason.
Jamie in Medford dropped a question off. Probably should have answered before. The buses are still mobile; they are still drivable. Engines intact, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're not taking any buses that aren't drivable. We're not taking any buses with rust. We're not taking any mold. These buses have to be in peak condition and fully drivable, and actually with low miles, because we want these buses to last, you know, the lifetime of a child, 20 years.
Now, I noticed, it's actually on your website, some different configurations that are possible. Some school buses have been converted into sleep buses. They look like old Pullman cars with rows of beds on both sides. That is not what you're talking about here, though, is it?
No, right now we're talking about schoolies for families, children and families. But that is a configuration that we can build, and we have offered that to the city of Ashland as a potential interim solution or even long term, should they choose to accept that. And that's available to other communities as well, so that if you can't come up with a brick and mortar shelter, we can do these sleep buses. It's based on an idea out of Australia, actually. And you can make a sleep bus fairly economically, and they're really nice. It's like you said, they look like a Pullman car. They're these little these beds that are cozy.
Essentially, alcoves that line the center aisle.
Yeah, thanks. I couldn't find the word for that. And they'll have, you know, they have bathrooms in the front, and they're warm, and they're private, and they have plug-ins, you know, so you can charge your cell phone. So those are available, and we could make those for folks if they want them.
Again, we're talking about Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change. Julie Akins is the founder and a longtime journalist, both here and across the country. Leo Gorsi, the development director. Questions, comments from you, ideas for how to proceed ahead for Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change? Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so because they are still functioning buses, they are mobile, there is some freedom from permits, things you don't have to do that you would have to do for tiny homes, things like that. You mentioned talking to the city of Ashland about this. Any other discussions around the valley about viability for the concept?
Yeah, actually, we have some pretty good support. I talked to the police chief, Ty O'Meara, just to get his take on it. He supports the idea as long as they're registered, insured, and in a legal parking space. So, and they will be, all those things, of course. And we have, I threw the idea out to Rug Retreat. They've been quite supportive. I don't know if they're going to actually want a sleep bus, but those are available. I do want to kind of have a conversation with Grants Pass, the community of Grants Pass, about sleep buses, because there's quite literally nowhere to sleep in Grants Pass. I did quite a bit of research up there. So I've shot it around the horn, and I'm waiting to hear back.
Yeah, to get back to the original coverage that you were doing, and you ended up going, you said, from Seattle down to the California desert.
Yeah,
talking to homeless people it was generally economics. That was the overriding theme that came out.
That's the overriding theme, and illness, because we don't have universal health care, and because a lot of folks don't have access to appropriate health care, either they or someone in their family got quite ill, and they fell behind, either because they couldn't go to work, or because they lost a spouse to illness, and so they weren't able to keep up their in several cases, their mortgage, and in most cases, their rent. So it can start with something small. If you're really on the margin, and more than 11 million Americans are, where they're paying more than half of their income on rent, something can happen. You can get sick and miss a month of work, and then that's it. You can't stay afloat. So that's what it mostly was. Very rarely would I find a different thing than that. It's somewhere around 20%, of people are suffering from a mental illness, like an actual illness. A lot of homeless people have trauma as a result of their condition, but an actual mental illness or addiction, it's somewhere around 20% for both of those conditions to exist in the homeless population. So we're talking somewhere in the mid 70 to 80% of people are literally economic refugees, and I don't think folks realize that.
All right, yeah, because I do think a lot of people walk around with the impression that these people would be in institutions if we still had institutions. For the mentally ill, but you're talking about this is not one in five is the number you're giving me.
Yeah, that's right.
People who are, so this is what we hear about all the time is that people are one illness, one loss of job, one something away from disaster. You've met a lot of people who've gone past that disaster. They're there.
They're there. And I think part of it is that when you see people who are homeless, you can think, oh, well, these folks have dropped out of society, or they have a serious issue, and it's really just an aesthetics issue. If people could get a shower every day, if they didn't have to carry 50 pounds, that's the average weight of a backpack, 50 pounds walking 10 miles a day in order to access services. So picture yourself, it's 100 degrees, you haven't had a shower in a week, you're carrying a 50-pound pack, and you're walking 10 miles. How pretty do you look? How good do you look? Do you look like somebody who fits in society or not? A lot of it is stuff like that, like incidental things that cause us to judge folks harshly as opposed to really digging underneath. And it really just takes talking to people and listening to their stories and then comparing that to the data that we know that exists. And then you see, oh, that overlay is very clear.
Wow, you have learned so much. 50-pound packs even to get the average weight. Yeah,
50 pounds.
So, Leo Gorcey, before we go, tell people what they can do to help you in your job as development director. If we're talking about other than the stove and oven combo, the fridge and the inverter, what can you use from people?
Actually, people have been contributing all sorts of things, time, energy. People come by the bus, which is on Van Ness and Water Street, right in town here, and people see the sign out there. They come by. They donate a day or two of labor. People are really excited about the project and really supportive of it. What Julie said earlier, the furnishings, stoves, sinks, things that we can use, beds, anything that we can use, it has to fit in the bus, of course, so we can't take everything.
But and how big a family could fit in the bus when you're done with it, Julie?
Well, our goal is to have a four-person bus, so two bunk beds for kids that we're going to make, and then a master bedroom for mom and dad or whoever the legal provider is for that child.
Okay, the first bus underway now.
If you go to our website, vehiclesforchanges.com, it shows ways that you can donate and help out.
Okay, Forever Homes, Vehicles for Change. Julie Akins is the founder. Leo Gorcey, the development director. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.